Good morning, and may it please the court. Greg Goodwin on behalf of the Missouri Department of Mental Health in this certiorari case. Since 2007, Mr. Fisher has had many different labels as he progressed through the criminal justice system. At first, he was accused. Then after he was charged, he became a criminal defendant. He entered a plea of guilty in Jackson County and became an offender at the Missouri Department of Corrections. He later became a patient or a client at the Missouri Department of Mental Health. He then escaped, of course, and was an escapee, and then has been since returned to the Missouri Department of Mental Health, where he is a patient, receiving the treatment that is undisputed that he needs. Now, Mr. Fisher has filed one writ of habeas corpus challenging the validity of two of his not guilty pleas by reason of mental disease or defect. The habeas court's decision to grant habeas relief in those cases is erroneous and should be reversed by this court for several reasons. The first reason, and this reason applies to both the Jackson County case and the Audrain County case, is that Mr. Fisher's claims are prohibited by the self-invited error rule. The statute places the responsibility of drafting the notice on Mr. Fisher, and now he has alleged that his notices were either not filed in the case of Audrain County, or in the case of Audrain County, if it was filed, it was didn't contain the magic language, and in the Jackson County case as well, that he did not sign the notice. Those alleged errors are errors that are not attributable to the state or to the trial court who did what Mr. Fisher asked. They're attributable to Mr. Fisher, and so he should not receive habeas relief for alleged procedural defects that he created. If the court adopts a rule or sustains Mr. Fisher's habeas relief, then it will have created a situation where an individual can create avoidable procedure merely by not following the rules and then complaining years later that he should have followed the rules. And importantly, in this case, the right result was reached. Mr. Fisher was committed to the Department of Mental Health because at the time that he committed the offense in Jackson County, he was not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. He was hearing voices that caused him to set fire to his girlfriend's porch.
Could I ask a preliminary question? Because you're going to the substance of the writs as to whether or not he's entitled to writs. What makes this a case where he's entitled to habeas to consider the merits? How is this case, the claims of error, how do they fit under those types of claims on which we would grant habeas relief? You triggered that thought by your statement that it was an error that caused the proceeding to be voidable rather than void.
Right. And my comment there is because for voidable as opposed to void, Mr. Fisher isn't alleging that the procedures have caused his plea to be void because he's the one who asked.
He's claiming his due process rights were violated, but if one does not raise those due process rights timely, then you don't get habeas relief for all due process violations. It's only certain things that would call into question the validity, it would seem, the validity of the conviction or the validity of the court's action.
Right. I think I understand your question in sort of two parts. The first is sort of a question about the distinction between void and voidable. Here, there's no allegation that the state could have come back and said 7 years later that Mr. Fisher's NGRI pleas were no longer valid and that his acquittal should be overturned and that he should be placed back into the criminal justice system. So that's the distinction between a void and voidable. I think I understand the other part of your question to be sort of a question about procedural default or a timing issue.
Or how do they meet the criteria of showing entitlement to habeas?
Right. And so there is an affirmative burden on Mr. Fisher to show that he was entitled to habeas in this case. And the fact that the defects that he's alleging have occurred are defects of his own making really prevents him from being able to show.
Well, there's two different aspects to this, though. I mean, you're not alleging defects of his own making in the first part, which is that everybody seems to agree he was not competent to plead guilty, and he had a right to withdraw his, was not competent to enter the plea he did. The question is, that everybody seems to disagree on, is whether it was inappropriate, or was it self-invited error, you're saying, other things, to then enter an NGRI plea after his initial guilty plea was withdrawn.
I think that the question of the self-invited error in this case is whether it's appropriate for him to be able to obtain habeas relief for the NGRI plea that he wanted to enter.
But not the first part. You're not contesting that where he, everybody agreed at the time he entered his guilty plea, he was
right, and that agreement is sort of related to what the court was discussing in the first two cases on the docket today. That the withdrawal, the successful 2435 motion, is part and parcel with the agreement to enter NGRI.
Well, that's one of the questions before us, is whether it is.
Right.
Because if he's not competent, he's not competent, it doesn't depend on whether he later agrees, unless you've made it, because that's part of the agreement.
Right, but the, so, but the...
I mean, you're not saying you could keep him in prison even though you agreed he was incompetent and the plea was involuntary.
No, so the question about the scope of relief is, to what point back in the proceedings should Mr. Fisher be returned? And I think that the right answer there is to return him with a pending Form 40 and allow the public defender to enter the case and file an amended motion, if the court is going to sustain habeas relief in the Jackson County case.
Why is that, if everybody agreed that he was, in fact, at the time of his guilty plea, not, they just don't agree now, that he was not competent to enter it?
Because that agreement at the time of the 2435, in that agreement, the state gave up some of its options. So under 552, the state has the ability to hire an additional expert, right? Or Mr. Fisher, if he didn't receive the evaluation that he wanted from the Department of Mental Health, he could have hired an expert to provide a contesting opinion.
Is that new now on the record here?
I'm sorry?
Is that, I mean, I didn't see anything on the record suggesting that you thought he wasn't. I thought everybody agreed that at the time he was not.
At the time, the state, yes, the state entered an agreement, but that agreement is not two separate agreements. It's an agreement that...
It was. There was nothing in the... Was there some joint agreement that said you had to do both together?
Yes, that's the negotiated disposition that Mr. Fisher and the prosecutor
objected. Is there something in writing
that
says that, and did he agree to that?
I don't think that there is a written plea agreement or a written withdrawal, but the Mr. Fisher's attorney represented that to the Jackson County Court on the record in that case. Mm-hmm. The 2435 record begins with a statement, I want to update the court on what's been happening. Here's our agreement. First, the state has agreed to allow me to succeed on my 2435, and then I will enter an NGRI plea because I was NGRI at the time of the offense. At the time of the offense. Which is the right answer, because Mr. Fisher was NGRI at the time he set fire to the porch. And I know, Judge Fisher, did you have a...
I think what Judge Breckenridge was inquiring is that generally for habeas, there has to be some facial invalidity to the judgment or actual innocence, and neither one of those things are pled to be present in this case.
That's right. I think in the light most favorable to Mr. Fisher's argument, for the Jackson County case, and what the habeas court found is that there was a facial invalidity in that the notice was not signed by Mr. Fisher.
But that is, again, there are defects in all kinds of proceedings, and those defects can be waived by not objecting to them.
That's
and
right.
Here, you're saying not only did he not object to them, he created them. But nevertheless, they were simply defects, failure to follow the statute, which he's claiming failure to follow the statute 8 years later voids the should entitle him to have it vacated, the orders vacated. And simply because there's a statutory violation in a proceeding does not allow one under habeas or writ proceedings to vacate proceedings.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I want to return to something the court said just a few minutes ago about due process. The purpose of due process is to avoid an erroneous deprivation. In this case, even if the court cuts through all of the procedural issues, there was no erroneous deprivation in Audrain County or Jackson County because Mr. Fisher was NGRI at the time. And it's the right result for somebody who is suffering from a mental disease or defect at the time alleged criminal activity occurs, for that person to be acquitted of the crime, be committed to the Department of Mental Health, and receive treatment until they are either no longer ill or no longer a danger to themselves or
others. So in Jackson County, the same day that he asserted the NGRI defense, and it was the same day the court accepted it, and there was no pretrial evaluation, and you're saying that's not a due process violation.
There was a pretrial evaluation. There was a pretrial evaluation first in Audrain County, and then an additional pretrial evaluation issued for Jackson County.
How long prior to that date was that conducted?
The Audrain County evaluation was, I think, May of 2007, September of 2007, and the Jackson County evaluation was May of 2008, so mere months.
And when was the hearing?
The Jackson County hearing was in December of 2008, so a mere months later.
So was that hearing held before he asserted the defense? I mean, it looks like from the record that he asserted the defense and was accepted by the court on the same day.
That's correct, because Mr. Fisher had engaged in discussions with the prosecutor off the record, sort of in the context of the Rule 24035 pleading.
Was he competent to do that?
Was who competent?
At the time of the plea, was he competent to enter into that agreement? Was there any inquiry on the record?
The 24035 plea or the...
Any and all of the pleas.
There was an inquiry on the record for the guilty plea. Mm-hmm. Subsequent to that, Mr. Fisher obtained an evaluation that cast some doubt on his competency in 2007 to plead mm-hmm. guilty. But that same report indicates that he was competent in 2007, in the Audrain County case, that he was competent to understand the role of his attorney, the role of the prosecutor, and the role of the judge, and there's no indication that he lost competency at any point thereafter. I know that I'm over time, so I will save my other points for rebuttal unless there are more questions.
Thank you.
May please the court. Mm-hmm. I believe that Judge Russell and Judge Sith have gotten right to the heart of what was causing the habeas court to have the most problems with this case, and that was just the whole procedure by which Mr. Fisher had his previous guilty plea set aside and an NGRI entered on his behalf by counsel, and we see now that was all done on a record that where Mr. Fisher himself was never asked about any questions for the court to determine whether he was currently on December whatever day in 2008, the day that all happened, whether he was at that time competent to be entering into a not guilty by reason of mental disease or plea. And that was just minutes after the court had found that his previous plea of guilty had to be set aside because he was incompetent to proceed at that time.
Was that order appealable?
Which order?
The order fine accepting the not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect and the commitment to the Department of Mental Health.
It was not appealable.
Why not?
Because there's no mechanism for a person who pleads not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect to appeal that judgment if the state accepts that plea. Certainly this court has seen cases where that plea may have been asserted at a bench trial, and then if the verdict is that the defendant is NGRI, then there's a direct appeal from that conviction, but there's no such appeal when the state accepts that NGRI plea.
And what's facially invalid about that judgment?
Well,
I understand what's wrong with the affidavit, but what's facially invalid with the judgment that was entered by the court?
The best thing that I can point to is the thing that I can't remember which of the judges mentioned it, was the fact that there was an examination supporting the not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect plea that was asserted by counsel that had been performed prior to the time that Mr. Fisher had even pled not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. And what the habeas court pointed out was that's really an impossibility if you're looking at 552.030.
How can we tell that, though, from the face of that judgment? What I mean, didn't the court have to go beyond the face of that judgment in order to come up with that rationale?
Which court are we? I'm sorry, there's so many judgments. Which court?
The one that you're currently attacking.
The habeas judge.
Right.
Okay. Could you please repeat your question?
Sure. Yeah. What's facially invalid about that judgment?
He's talking about the Jackson County and the
right.
Audrain County.
Yeah, the Jackson County
findings
judgment.
Of not guilty in GRI.
Well, in Audrain, it's a much more simple case where there was no notice filed along with the NGRI plea that said there were no other defenses. And there was this whole, if you
well, that's the affidavit, but the judgment does say that there were no other defenses.
Yes, it does. But the habeas court was asked to determine whether Mr. Fisher was being held unlawfully. And what that court found was that, you know, this court itself has held in Ex parte Kent that is a necessary prerequisite to the state accepting a plea of NGRI, that there must be a filing where the defendant states that he has no other defenses. And in fact, Mr. Fisher testified at the habeas hearing that he did have other defenses, at least in the Jackson County, or at least he claimed that he was not mentally ill. He also stated on the record that he wanted to accept a plea of guilty, a plea offer that was made in Audrain County to a lesser offense. So, you know, these are things that caused that habeas court to question whether Mr. Fisher himself, especially in the Jackson County case, was the person to make the decision to enter the NGRI plea. And what we see from the record of the proceedings that happened in Jackson County, where the PCR and then the NGRI plea were all done on the same day, pretty much in the same short proceeding, was Mr. Fisher was never asked anything on the record, and he never asserted that plea himself.
So he never said on the record this was his plea, and he was entering into it.
Beg your pardon?
He never said on the record that was his plea.
No, he never said a word or was asked anything on the record. And what makes that very concerning, and I think what why the habeas court had a problem with this, is we're not just dealing with the run-of-the-mill criminal defendant here. And our Rule 2402 gives direction to the court that with that run-of-the-mill, you know, defendant, you've got to make sure that they are knowingly, involuntarily, intelligently waiving their right to counsel, their right to have a jury trial, their right to present a defense and cross-examine witnesses. We're dealing here with people who are mentally ill. Mr. Fisher, severe neuropsychological impairment, severe academic deficiencies. His thinking is severely disturbed. He does not trust other people. He's unable to differentiate what is real from what is not.
Well, you're right that we always put plea hearings on the record and you always ask the defendant about it. So why wasn't that done here? And why did the trial court? Because the court thought he was incompetent and could not agree? Or?
I don't know. I don't know why the judge didn't. Certainly the Western District Court of Appeals in the Oxenhandler case last year said that it really would be the best practice for these pleas to be on the record. Our rule does not require it. Our Rule 2402 says a defendant can plead guilty, can plead not guilty, can plead NGRI, but then only goes into detail on what should happen in a guilty plea. And here we're dealing with a much more vulnerable sector of defendants, people who have mental illness, sometimes people who have been found incompetent to proceed in the past.
And I'll ask this question, the same question I asked in a prior argument. The case law says that it is counsel's responsibility to make sure that matters are on the record. And so does that not fall on his counsel's responsibility for not making sure there was a record?
Sure. I think counsel should have gone on the record. I would have loved to have had counsel testify at the habeas hearing as to what happened. What were his discussions with Mr. Fisher? Why, you know, there was no evidence presented to the habeas court to satisfy the court's question about did Mr. Fisher himself decide to make this NGRI plea? And Mr. Fisher is the person who's being unlawfully held. So whether it's counsel's obligation to do that is really, I agree, it should be done. It's the best practice. But the question here is Mr. Fisher being held unlawfully? And the habeas court found, yes, he was, because his due process rights were violated, in that this whole procedure was so screwy that the court could not come away from the habeas hearing and the evidence that was presented to that court and be satisfied that Mr. Fisher himself was the one to say, I have no other defenses, I want to plead not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect.
So it doesn't matter if, in fact, Mr. Fisher's conduct on his behalf at the hearing could be considered to be inviting those errors by going forward and asking for this relief and not asking for it despite some procedural irregularities.
I'm not sure I understand the question, Your Honor.
Is it invited error that shouldn't entitle him to relief?
Is it invited error that he filed for habeas relief?
No. Back in the original proceedings for the NGRI proceedings and the commitment.
I dispute that that was invited error. First of all, I don't think that's a question that's been preserved for this court. It was not argued to the habeas court that it was invited error. The other thing is that Mr. Fisher, you know, we know now that Mr. Fisher was determined to be incompetent to proceed at the time that he entered that NGRI or that guilty plea in Jackson County. So as Judge Smith pointed out, so are we going to impute to him error that occurred at a time that we now know that he was incompetent to proceed?
But you're also saying that the same defendant who was, by all accounts, equally incompetent at the time the NGRI plea was entered, that we should have asked him, the incompetent defendant, whether he had other defenses and whether this was the plea he was entering. If he had, you would be here arguing that he's incompetent and it shouldn't matter what he says.
Well, I'm going to have to clarify what I'm saying. It's not that I'm arguing that he absolutely was incompetent at the time of the Jackson County NGRI plea. On that day, the court found that a couple years prior, when he entered his guilty plea in Jackson County, he was incompetent to proceed at that time. Then the court accepted his NGRI plea. I'm not saying he was incompetent to proceed at that time. I'm saying that we don't know whether he was competent to proceed. There's this gap of time where Mr. Fisher was still in the Department of Corrections, where according to Dr. Frank's reports, he was not getting the type of treatment that would allow him to be the best he could possibly be, that he would get better treatment in the Department of Mental Health and possibly improve there. So there's this question, what was his mental status? And this just goes right back to, what should we be doing? What should courts be doing when they are accepting not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect pleas? If a court, you know, a court is not supposed to even take that plea unless the defendant is competent to make it. But in Jackson County, there was never a determination once he was found to have been previously incompetent to enter a guilty plea. There was no determination by the Jackson County judge. Now I believe he's competent. Now we're going to say, Mr. Fisher, what do you plead in this case? So there's a couple of different things going on. The question of whether he was competent is still up in the air. The other thing is the fact that Mr. Fisher, the habeas court found Mr. Fisher, the habeas court was not convinced that he had anything to do with the assertion of that NGRI plea on his own behalf. And we see from the record that he was there, but he was just not involved. And he testified. They all signed these papers, and then it was done.
If in fact a defendant pled guilty instead of NGRI, and counsel represented to the court that his client was doing it, and client was sitting there in the hearing and didn't object, and so there were defects in the guilty plea proceeding, would anyone with defects in a guilty plea proceeding be entitled to a habeas 8 years later? To get out of prison.
Any person is entitled to file that petition to say that they're being unlawfully confined.
Their habeas claim that they should be entitled to have their guilty plea set aside for defects in the proceeding?
I think it just depends on what else was going on at the time. I mean, certainly a court can look at how that was handled, what was said. I know that I can't think of the case name, but there has been cases decided before where even though it was not elaborated on and all the questions asked, the court has found on appeal that because of the discussions that were had in court and the defendant's presence, or you know, that satisfied the rule.
What I'm trying to discern is whether if we don't say that errors in taking a guilty plea entitle one to habeas relief years later, you're asking us to do it in the case of an NGRI because of the mental state of the defendant. Is that the distinction that you would make?
I think, without having a lot of time to think about it, I think that's the best distinction that I can say, is that we are dealing with a class of people who I think the state has an interest in giving a little bit extra protection to.
Because you said there's nothing in the record that indicates, that proves, even in the habeas proceeding, that he was incompetent at the time of the NGRI.
That's correct. I can't say that he was.
But there was evidence in the record that he was incompetent at the time he entered his original guilty plea.
Absolutely.
2 years earlier.
Right. Absolutely. Mental health is a fluctuating thing. So we see in the reports.
Who had the burden to bring that to the court's attention? Why wouldn't his counsel have the obligation to bring that to the court's attention?
Mr. Fisher represented himself pro se in the habeas petition. He had the burden to, with the preponderance of the evidence, put it forward to the court. What he put forward to the court was convincing to the court. You know, the court found Mr. Fisher credible
I think the question was, who had the burden in Jackson County of raising these issues you're now raising?
Well, I don't know that these issues were at issue in Jackson County at the time. You know, the defendant has the burden of putting forward that affirmative defense of NGRI.
If that's the case situation, then where's the facial invalidity of the court's judgment? I mean, if nobody brought to the, you're complaining about things that nobody brought to the court's attention, and the court otherwise entered a valid judgment. And if that's correct, and there's no allegation of actual innocence, which there isn't here, then how are you entitled to habeas relief?
May I answer?
Please.
In a habeas proceeding, Mr. Fisher is allowed to say, "I'm being held unlawfully," and have the court look at what happened. It's not necessarily always going to be some facial invalidity like it was in the Audrain County case, where there was no filing of notice of no other defenses. Here, when the court reviewed all the proceedings that happened in Jackson County and listened to the testimony and considered all of the evidence that was before the habeas court, that court found that there was not enough to convince that judge that it was Mr. Fisher himself who asserted that NGRI plea, and that that was a violation of his right to due process. And I would ask that this court affirm the judgment of the circuit court and quash the writ of certiorari.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Judge Breckenridge, I want to begin by responding to your question. The commitment order from the Jackson County Circuit Court is absolutely a final appealable order. It disposes of all of the issues in the criminal case by acquitting Mr. Fisher. That's certainly a final appealable order. A direct appeal could have been filed in this case, but was not.
Because you can't appeal a guilty plea, except for a very limited basis. But you can appeal an NGRI determination and commitment.
That's right, Your Honor. And this would be one of those bases. What Mr. Fisher is arguing is that the NGRI plea court didn't follow the right procedures, which is another way to articulate that it was acting beyond its statutory authority, which is a jurisdictional type question that you could raise in a direct appeal from a guilty plea.
I'm not sure it's jurisdictional.
It's not. It's statutory authority, but I think that that's a valid basis for a guilty plea. If, for instance, sort of like the Laughlin versus Bowersox case where somebody was convicted of robbing a post office, but the post office was actually federal land. If someone pled guilty to that, you know, that's not only jurisdictional, but I think also statutory authority in nature. I would also say, in respect to the question about was Mr. Fisher competent in Jackson County when he entered his NGRI plea, the record demonstrates that he was. Movement's Exhibit Number 1, a September 21st, 2007 report on page number 22, says that Mr. Fisher is able to cooperate in a rational manner with counsel in presenting a defense, that he understands the nature and the purposes of the proceedings taken against him, and that he is competent. So that's a finding in 2007, which is before the NGRI plea, but after the original guilty plea. So if Mr. Fisher was incompetent when he entered his guilty plea, if we assume that, there was a finding in 2007 after the guilty plea that he was competent to proceed. And after that finding, there's no dispute about the validity of that finding, and then Mr. Fisher enters his NGRI plea. And in fact, Mr. Fisher's attorney at the Jackson County case said, quote, that Mr. Fisher had been found competent to proceed. So it's not the fault of the Jackson County Circuit Court for not inquiring into the validity of Mr. Fisher's competency, because every piece of information in front of the Jackson County Court indicated that he was competent at that time.
And were those findings from the Eldrain County Court?
Yes, the 2007 report, Movement's Exhibit Number 1, that's a report that was submitted to the Eldrain County Court. But it was also admitted to the Jackson County Court. And Mr. Fisher had importantly entered an NGRI plea in Eldrain County before he entered his NGRI plea in Jackson County. And that goes back to sort of the bottom tier issue here. Was there an erroneous deprivation, an erroneous decision? There was not. Mr. Fisher, the purpose of habeas is to do justice, I think, at bottom. And justice in this case is the commitment of a mentally ill man who was mentally ill at the time that he committed these offenses for treatment in the Department of Mental Health. The right result was reached.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.